From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Simon Marks. Hello there. How you doing? How's your Monday been thus far? I hope you had a good weekend. It's myself, who else, with you for the next hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. I've no idea. Do join in. It's at Richie BBG. No, it isn't. Mother of Divine Jesus. It's at BBG Richie. At BBG Richie it is. That's the one.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
So you're starting with the blasphemy a bit earlier than usual. I am today. God love me.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Lovely jubbly, as it were. Now, welcome to the programme. Me and you today, flying solo. And there's a lot to talk about today. There always is, but today there is particularly. Do, as I said, please throw comments at me via Twitter. Please do that, and I will read them out as I go along. It's been a good day today. I'm here. We're alive, you and me. Rule number one, I suppose, is wake up. If you wake up, you've fulfilled rule number one. Now, one or two people, or more than one or two, depending on where you are in the world, might have been and might still be experiencing difficulties getting onto my website. I myself cannot access my website for the fourth day in a row. That is not the fault of my developer, the great Hayden Hewitt. This is a DNS issue. It's out of our control. We just have to wait until the various ISPs catch up around the globe. The rinky-dink has to be connected to the spark plugs or something like that. I'm a technophobe, so I haven't a Scooby-Doo what any of this means. But I know the site is brilliant. It looks great. It's going to be fantastic. We just have to bear with a little bit of teasing. I suppose teasing for the next day or two. I haven't been able to get on, and I'm staying relatively calm. There are things I wanted to upload there, but I couldn't do that, even though Hayden said, I'll do it for you, but I much prefer to do it myself. So I will check again tomorrow. But right now, let me check. Any joy? No, I can't get on. But a lot of people are on, and that's good. Thank you for telling me. Do tell Hayden he'll be chuffed to bits, even though this is not a problem of his making at all, at all, at all. As Mick Lally used to say one time on the telly. Did you have a good weekend? Did you watch the foosball yesterday afternoon? Liverpool United was a bit of a damp squib. Not great, but we didn't lose. 0-0 in the end. That was what I did. I had a few cans of Guinness. So I did. I got in the post yesterday just in time for the Guinness. I got my new Guinness harp glasses. I was delighted. So I was. Because you can't drink Guinness out of anything but a Guinness glass. So you can't. Right. Now, quick answer to a question that I was sent quite a bit overnight. Sunday Morning Melodies, the brand new music programme airing on Sundays at 10 o'clock, will not go to podcast. Why? Because it's music. And if I send it to podcast, it will automatically, there is nothing I can do to prevent it. It will automatically go to iTunes and it will go to Spotify. And then they will delete it. And I'm not sure that they won't get pissed off and delete the Richie Allen Show entirely. You see? So what I'm going to do is Sunday Morning Melodies, I nearly said something silly, Sunday Morning Melodies will air at 10 o'clock every Sunday. And then it will begin repeating on my stream on the website at 2 o'clock UK time and will run then until the following day. That is the only way to hear Sunday Morning Melodies, is on the website. But it's very easy. So I know, in 2021, you like to have things on demand. I know you're a bunch of spoiled little babies, little whingers. You like things when you want them. Well, you can get the Richie Allen Radio Show, the news show, anytime you want, at your leisure, via podcast, via the lot. But the music show will only be live at 10 o'clock and then repeating from 2 o'clock onwards on the website, the only way to hear it. I thought I was dreaming today. I read that Donald Trump, well, it's not going to happen, but it's been recommended. So toxic now is Donald Trump. Well, he is. At least he's toxic among snowflakes. there have been calls to airbrush the man out of the film, the movie, Home Alone 2. And even the star of the series, Macaulay Culkin, seems to think it's a grand old idea. Chris Columbus, who directed Home Alone 2, said, like most locations in New York City, you pay a fee and you are allowed then to shoot in that location. We approached the Plaza Hotel, which Donald Trump used to own. We wanted to shoot in the lobby. We couldn't rebuild the plaza on a soundstage. Trump said no bother at all. We paid the fee. But then apparently Trump said, the only way you can use the plaza is if I'm in the film. And he has a cameo where he bumps into Macaulay Culkin, who's staying in the hotel in the film. So we screened it for the first time. The oddest thing happened, says Columbus. When we screened it, people tended to cheer when the Donald showed up on screen. So we left it in the film. Trump, he said, it's a moment for the audience, but he did bully his way into the movie. Bully? They just could have said no. Anyway, where does that all end? You might have a comment on that, because it might sound funny. But there are people, if they were given their way, would airbrush him out of the film. Madness. Now, I was running yesterday, I told you, on Sunday Morning Melodies. I said, I'm off now, I'm going to get talked out, I said, after the programme, and I'm going to go for a 5 or 6 kilometre run. And I ran down Liverpool Street, heading for Regent Road. Regent Road, heading towards Manchester. And when you do that particular route, you do pass the Clarendon Leisure Centre. Now, Salfordians will know about the Clarendon Leisure Centre. And as I approached this yesterday at breakneck speed, such is the velocity of my runs, I'm an amazing runner, I've decided from now on in I'm going to become more like Donald Trump. To hell with modesty. To hell with humility. I'm a great runner. I'm great. Right? I am a great runner, as it happens. So I'm running pretty hard. And as I approach the Clarendon Leisure Centre, which is on the left-hand side as I run towards the city of Manchester, there was a lot of traffic, I noticed. Lots of traffic. Cars parked at the side of the road. People walking around. I thought there might be a big fat gypsy wedding going on. That was my first thought. I thought Simi or Paddy or I don't know, the Cash family or the Morrisseys, I don't know. I thought there might be a traveller wedding or a traveller do. Because I said that the centre is generally closed. It's been closed in lockdown. What's going on? You know where this is going, don't you? As I got closer to the centre, it became apparent to me what was actually going on. Lots of older looking people were queuing, distanced, and security was ushering them for vaccinations. This was yesterday, Sunday. And this morning I checked online, and yes, the Clarendon Leisure Centre in Salford is closed in lockdown. It is a vaccine depot now. It's a vaccination centre. And I'll tell you this, dear listener, it was fairly shocking to see it. You know, the queues, people shuffling forward, knowing what we know, knowing how potentially dangerous the vaccine is. It was fairly depressing to see it. And we'll talk about so-called anti-vaccination or anti-vaxxers shortly. But vaccination centres and hubs are making the news in the UK today. According to the BBC, COVID-19 vaccinations begin today for people aged 70 and over in England as 10 new mass vaccination hubs open. People listed as clinically extremely vulnerable will also start getting the first COVID jab today as well, or have begun getting the jab today. The vaccines minister, Nadeem Zahawi, says that once the top 4 priority groups are protected with jabs, restrictions might be eased from March. Nadeem Zahawi. And if you want to hear what the Prime Minister has to say on the rollout, here he is, Boris Johnson, speaking at a branch of Oxford University today, a wing. Could be Oxford. Here he is anyway, Johnson.
I think we've done about 4 million people in this country, which is obviously encouraging. But just being here at Oxford Biomedica and talking to the people who are putting the vaccine together here, you can see how immensely complex it is. And because it's absolutely got to be safe, and it is safe, it does take time to prepare. So we're getting it out as fast as we can. 4 million done so far. We're now, I think, have done more than half of the over 80s. Almost half of the people in care homes, the elderly residents of care homes. Those groups remain a top priority. Do everything we can, obviously, to open up. But when we come to February the 15th and the moment when we have to take stock of what we achieved, that's the time to look at the where the virus is, the extent of the infection, and the success that we've had. And it's only really then that we can talk about the way ahead and what steps we can take to relax. And it will be, I'm afraid, I've got to warn people, it will be gradual. You can't just open up in a great open sesame, a great bang, because I'm afraid the situation is still pretty precarious, as people can tell.
Yeah. You can't really open up open sesame. Right, so that was Boris Johnson. We will come back to this. So vaccinating the over 70s and new vaccination hubs opening around the country. The other big story today, you might have seen this, came out of an appearance by Jonathan Sumption on the BBC's Big Questions show yesterday. Now, according to the Guardian newspaper, the former Supreme Court Justice Jonathan Sumption has been criticised for telling a woman with stage 4 cancer that her life was less valuable during a televised discussion of the costs of coronavirus lockdowns. Appearing on the BBC One show, The Big Questions, to discuss the question of whether lockdown was punishing too many for the greater good, Sumption, one of the most prominent anti-lockdown campaigners, said he did not accept that all lives are of equal value. The former justice, who served on the Supreme Court until 2018, said he believed his children's and grandchildren's lives were worth more because they've got a lot more of it ahead. Responding to Sumption's remarks, Deborah James, who has stage 4 metastatic, pronounced that wrong, haven't I? Metastatic, that's right. Stage 4 metastatic bowel cancer and hosts the BBC's You, Me and the Big C podcast. She said, "With all due respect, I am the person who you say their life is not valuable." Sumption interrupted, saying, "I didn't say your life was not valuable. I said it was less valuable." Now, he was taken out of context, of course. Sumption was essentially saying that the government itself has done this. It has, we know this, we've talked about this before, the government has placed more value on the lives of 80-somethings with serious underlying health conditions, more value on them than on kids with their lives ahead of them. We'll come back to that. So Sumption went on Good Morning Britain this morning to set the record straight. And if you thought that Piers Morgan was an insufferable gobshite before now, well, have a listen to this. So was Lord Sumption saying that the lady with cancer is worth less than anyone else, or that her life has no value?
I was not saying anything of the sort. One of the problems is we were talking across each other and were therefore, as happens in these cases, at cross purposes. I was certainly not making any comment on her or her own health position. I was making a perfectly simple point, as the context quite clearly shows. Now, every policymaker has got to make difficult choices. Sometimes that involves putting a value on human life. It's a standard concept in health economics, quality-adjusted life years. That's what I was talking about. Policymakers have to do that because otherwise they cannot weigh up the consequences of different policy choices. It doesn't mean that people are morally worth less. It doesn't mean that they're worth less in the eyes of God or in the eyes of their fellow citizens. But sometimes policymakers have to say some lives are worth less than others, no, simply because...
Here's my problem with you putting a valuation on individual life, regardless of their age or condition or whatever. And I've heard this argument a lot from the anti-lockdown brigade, is that they seem quite dismissive, that older people, vulnerable people should all just be either, you know, put away, or we should not overlook the fact they would have died anyway. Here, let me give you a hypothetical. I'd like you just to respond to this, given your eminent background. But let's take the example of a 98-year-old man who has a very bad fall and ends up in hospital with multiple fractures and is feeling so bad and feels like he's dying that he personally signs a do not resuscitate notice and puts it on his door. Now, would you say that that person in that circumstance has basically reached the end of his value in terms of his life?
What a totally contemptible, risible, virtue-signalling goon Piers Morgan is. He didn't listen to a word Thumption said. Thumption clearly said nobody is morally, is worth, morally speaking, he said everybody is of the same value. But policymakers have since the year dot been placing a value on people's lives. And he explains this again quite clearly here to Piers Morgan, who's either too stupid or too obtuse to understand what he's being told.
Listen, it depends what you mean by value. If you are making a policy choice, for example, in the National Health Service, suppose that resources are limited and you cannot devote resources to both that man and a 25-year-old who has come in a serious road accident, then obviously you have to take account of the fact that the quality years ahead of the man of 25 are much greater. This is absolutely okay, basic.
Let me just explain to you why I gave you that example in terms of the value of somebody's life.
You thought you heard virtue signalling before? Wait till you hear Morgan here.
That person I'm talking about, Lord Sumption, if I may, that person that you I was talking about was Captain Sir Tom Moore.
Oh, dear God.
Captain Sir Tom Moore was the man lying on a hospital bed, aged 98, who had multiple fractures, who did not want to be resuscitated and felt like his life was over. By your yardstick, his value was far less than that of somebody in their 20s.
He never said anything like that, did Thumption?
And yet I would say to you that the great value that we got out of Captain Sir Tom Moore came after that, when he was 99, when he began walking and he began rallying the country and inspiring the world and raised nearly £40 million and was one of the superstars of the entire pandemic. How can you possibly say that he, at 98, has less value as a person, as a human being, given what we know he then did at 99?
Piers, you're not listening to what I'm saying.
Well, he's too stupid to listen or to understand what it is Sumption is saying, obviously.
I have not said that he has less value as a person. What I have said is that policy...
You literally said yesterday... Sorry to pick you up on this, but I'm quoting your own words. You literally reiterated several times yesterday... I watched it. You reiterated that you believed older people have less value. That was your words, not mine. I'm not putting words in your mouth.
Well, he is, of course, putting words in his mouth. And Jonathan Sumption owns Piers Morgan right here.
What you are doing is taking part of my words and throwing them back at me as if they were the whole. And that, as you know perfectly well, Piers, is a grossly unfair way of approaching a difficult issue.
Absolutely.
Now, I made my position perfectly clear if you look at the clip as a whole and at the debate as a whole. This is a tool for policymakers. It's not a way of valuing individuals like Captain Tom Moore. I quite agree with what you said about Captain Tom Moore. But one thing that policymakers can't do is say, well, we will look at the life history of every patient in hospital and we will work out whether they have contributed more to society and so on. Policymakers can't operate like that. They have to operate on metrics, and they do all the time.
What caused offence? I'm sorry again to put your own words back at you, but what caused the offence was your use of the word value, that somehow some people are just less valuable because they get older.
When speaking to someone who has chronic cancer.
And this is the very shrill, very fishwife-esque Susanna Reid piping in now.
Cancer issues... And you seem to imply in that television debate that that life was of less value. Did you mean to direct that to someone, the mother with young children? Because that's how it felt to those watching.
Yeah, she's just as bad. They're deliberately trying to confuse the audience by not engaging Sumption on what he is saying. Sumption has made a big mistake this morning. He agreed to go on a panel. He's on a panel of four other guests. You should listen to Dr. Vernon Coleman. Avoid panels at all costs, because you don't get to say what it is you want to say. His response to Susanna Reid?
I was not intending to make any comment at all about Deborah James's personal position. I've made that perfectly clear to her since. We have had a friendly exchange on the point, and I regard this matter as closed. I am not going to say any more on this subject. You invited me onto the programme to comment on a poll. If you wish to do that, I'm very happy to comment on it. If you don't wish to do it, then I'm off.
OK, well, no, before you go off, let me just remind you, Lord Sumption, it is you that used the word value. It's not me. It's not the programme. You yourself said that elderly people have less value. And I gave you an example of somebody whose real value to this country came in his 99th year. And I just took exception to you categorising human life with a word like value.
I've explained to you exactly what I meant by value. I explained that on the programme yesterday, and I have no more to say about this particular topic.
Good man. Jonathan Sumption on Good Morning Britain earlier today. So what is he saying, basically? He's saying that policymakers put a price on everything, even when making health policy decisions. And his earlier example was great, whether it was about Tom Moore or not. If a 98-year-old guy has had a very heavy fall and he's struggling in accident and emergency, and they're short-handed in there, they're very short-handed, right? A 25-year-old guy comes in from a car crash. If resources are limited, the decision will be to treat the young man first. The assumption is saying this, and he's right. He is saying that the government is seemingly making policy that values the lives of elderly people, some of whom are frail and have comorbidities, over the lives of the young. And why can he say that? Because lockdown is destroying the lives of the young, both from a health point of view now, right now, and also destroying their life prospects. So he's totally right there. That's what he means by value and how value is being assigned to people's lives. Nobody, especially me, is saying, and they keep gaslighting people like you and like me. They keep gaslighting us on television and radio and even in the newspapers, saying that we are heartless, cynical feckers that just want to abandon old people. Oh, to hell with them. Let them die. Of course, that's not the case at all. It's the sort of gaslighting that Piers Morgan was doing to Jonathan Sumption, the former Chief Justice, this morning. It's not the truth. It's not a binary choice. You know, choose the old over the young or choose the young over the old. Guys like me from day one have been saying, you know, locking people with comorbidities who are vulnerable to respiratory infections, locking them into their homes is a dangerous thing to do. The right thing to do is to make sure they have loads of vitamin C, vitamin D3, loads of zinc, daily supplements, a lot of fresh air, trips outside regularly, even in cold weather. That's what you do, and you give them every chance if they happen to pick up a nasty bug or a nasty virus. The government has made the decision that the lives of people who have lived most of their life and are now vulnerable to various ailments, that those people are more valuable than younger people. They've made that choice, the government. You and I have our opinions as to why they made that particular decision or that particular choice. It's fascinating stuff yesterday. That episode of The Big Questions is available to anybody or for anybody who wants to see it on the BBC iPlayer. Go to bbc.co.uk if you're in England. And if you're outside England, you'll get a VPN and you'll be able to watch it there. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. Monday's programme, the 18th of January, 2021. You and me, I'm flying solo this afternoon. This is music from Roy Orbison. A tune called You Got It, produced by Jeff Lynne. Who else?
Every time I look, anything you
it is 5:30 on Monday's programme. The BBG, not the BBC. The Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford here in the northwest of the UK. Thanks so much to all of you telling me how lovely the new website is looking. Thank you. You're taking the piss out of me. You're ripping the piss out of me. I can't see it. I haven't been able to get on for 4 days. Eh? 4 days. I've not been able to get on my website for 4 days. Hey, did you know that, Tom?
No. Could you repeat it? Because I can't believe my fucking ears.
I just can't get onto my own website. But it's nobody's fault. It's a DNS thing. And hopefully tomorrow morning I'll be able to get on. If I don't, you'll be able to hear my scream in Timbuktu. All right. Okay. It's at BBG Richie on Twitter. That's the one. I read the Sunday Times yesterday, as I always do. And I wanted to mention this next bit on Sunday Morning Melodies, but that will forever be a COVID-free zone. We'll never talk about coronavirus on Sunday Morning Melodies. Now, you might know this if you read the Sunday Times. Care home bosses in this country are looking to see whether or not they can mandate vaccines for their staff. Yes, you heard that right. Care home bosses in the UK are seeking legal advice as to whether they can insist that their staff are vaccinated against coronavirus and presumably other viruses in the future. LBC Radio's Nick Ferrari wanted to get into this on his programme, understandably. LBC, here he is, Nick Ferrari.
Care providers seeking legal advice whether they can force staff to have the COVID jab, as a poll reveals some young people are shunning the vaccines. Now, I'm not a young person at all, but why anyone would shun the vaccine, I don't know. Having said that, I don't think any of us necessarily would want to live in a country where you were forced to do it. You had absolute, and indeed it would be against some people's human rights, I would imagine, because some people who don't believe in vaccinations for anything. So allowing for the fact that we have tolerance in this country, which is something we should all applaud, although for the life of me, I cannot, literally probably in my case, given my age, for the life of me, I can't understand why you would not want the vaccination. Do we want to live in a country where choice is taken? Now, the National Care Association has taken the step of seeking legal opinion on whether care home workers can be made to accept vaccination. This, says the paper, thousands have refused. The paper also helpfully points out between 6 and 8% of the 1.5 million adult social care workforce in England are declining the jabs, which, if you do it roughly, it's over 100,000, around 100,000 people. Would you refuse? Funny enough, I asked my sons, who are obviously far younger than I, by very, very definition. They're both up for it the minute it's available. What? And again, do I respect... Well, I suppose I must respect your point of view, but why would you not want it? This comes as a poll between 18 to 34-year-olds says just 41% would definitely take the vaccine. Unsurprisingly, as you go up the age groups, it increases.
Right, it increases as you go up the age groups, but only 41% of younger people said they intend to take the vaccine when it is offered to them. Beverly Sunderland is the director of Crossland Employment Solicitors. Employment law is her bag. Ferrari asked her if it's possible for firms to insist on staff having the jab.
The first thing I feel I ought to say, Nick, is that what people need to remember is that the vaccine protects the person who is vaccinated. There is currently no evidence that it stops you passing it on to other people. And therefore, priority in the care homes is to get the elderly folk vaccinated to protect them. And I think it's really important to say that. Now, in terms of the legal perspective, we've got the European Convention of Human Rights, as you have already highlighted, and you've got Article 9, freedom of thought, conscience, religion, and you can see either a union or an individual taking the point that they have a firmly held belief that they should not be forced to take a vaccination. Now, there is a get out under Article 9, and by the way, I know we've exited Europe. It has no effect on the European Convention of Human Rights. There is a get out in that the government can prescribe by law a law to say, look, this is in the best interest of everybody's health. It is perfectly acceptable to make people have vaccines. I doubt they're going to do that. I mean, you know, we're not living in a communist state where you're told what to do by...
And you would never support something such as that, would you, Beverly?
Absolutely not.
No. Dear no. Dear God, no. But it's worth hearing that little bit in the middle again.
There is a get out in that the government can prescribe by law a law to say, look, this is in the best interest of everybody's health. It is perfectly acceptable to make people to have vaccines.
Yeah. It is within their capability to insist that people have the vaccine. But she goes on to say she doesn't think they would do it. Yeah. They talk about the Equality Act then. And she says the Equality Act doesn't just cover people who would refuse medicine on religious grounds, but also covers those who would refuse it on philosophical grounds as well. This is important.
You will know, Nick, because I'm sure we've talked about it before, that it is not only religion, but also philosophical belief.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a genuinely held belief, which is more than just an opinion. Okay, it has to be worthy of respect in a democratic society. So therefore, if the reason for saying I don't want it is because you think that, for instance, I don't know, Bill Gates is trying to inject a microchip into us, then that might not have as much traction as saying, look, you know, I have a firmly held belief that I should not be expected to have vaccinations. I don't know, it's been produced fairly quickly. I don't know what effect it's going to have. Or, you know, I just have a belief that I will never have a vaccination. And where does it stop?
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea that you could be asked on philosophical grounds. You say, if they attempted to mandate it, you say, well, on philosophical grounds, I think I'll pass. Thank you very much. And what is your philosophical opinion? What is the philosophical reason for refusing to jab? Well, Bill Gates is trying to put microchips in us. Jab him. Jab the arse off of him. But if you were to say, I don't believe the state should have the right to compel me to take medicine that I don't want to take, they might say, you're excused. Wow. Anything else?
Stop. I mean, are they going to insist that every employee has a flu vaccination? Which, just to remind people, I think it was 2008, 60,000 people in the UK died of flu.
Mm.
And so I think it is a little bit of a slippery slope. The thing that gives me hope is that they actually are seeking legal advice before trying to implement it, because I think that is absolutely the right way round.
Yeah, no doubt it is. We'll follow that one closely. Again, just in case you missed it, care home owners and the body that represents them is seeking legal advice as to whether they can insist their staff are vaccinated. You know, no jab, no job kind of a thing. We'll definitely follow that. Now, here's a lovely example of how terrible, how sneaky, how slimy, how sly the mainstream media is, and how it is in complete lockstep with the government's and the World Health Organization and Billy Gates and all the rest of them that want everybody to have a jab. The media is in complete lockstep with the agenda. When Ferrari finished speaking with the lady from the law firm, he took some interesting calls on the programme, including a call from Melanie, who's got two daughters, both of them reluctant to take a vaccine. Listen to this and listen carefully to what happens at the end.
Melanie, in St Albans, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I was just listening to you saying about young people and that how you really didn't understand why they wouldn't take it up immediately. I have two daughters in their early 20s. And my concern and their concern is about the mRNA vaccines and the fact that the bio companies that have produced them and the NHS are not sure whether it affects their sterility or not.
Right.
And this is the main reason why they are hesitant.
But let me just give you a heads up there, okay? Melanie is talking about something which was broken on this programme, and that is, in the literature about the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, the mRNA vaccine, the literature that is sent to the person administering the vaccine clearly states that impact on fertility is unknown, okay? In the literature given even to the recipient, that's mysteriously absent. Now, some pharmacologists have said, well, they don't do fertility tests on nearly every drug, so you could say that fertility impact is unknown no matter what the drug. Well, I couldn't give a shite about other drugs. This is a drug that was rushed into being in a few months and was approved in a few months, and it's experimental. So it's very prescient, very pertinent, very important that we discuss why they tell those administering the jab that impact on fertility is unknown, but they keep that information away from those getting it. We talked about that when we discovered that a couple of months before Christmas, and she's explaining this to Nick Ferrari.
But what? They don't want the vaccine.
Of course. But
Of course. So her daughters are like, well, we're not going to take a chance. We don't need the vaccine, and I don't want to mess around with my fertility.
But what makes them think that it might in some way impact that?
Because it says impact on fertility is unknown, you fucking klutz. How clear does it have to be? Why take a chance?
Because there is advice on the NHS website given to NHS staff, and it's in black and white. Anybody can look at it and Google.
Is that right?
And it actually says they do not know whether this has any effect on sterility.
Right. Right, I see. So
this is a huge thing for young people.
It's massive. So this isn't if the girl is pregnant. This is if someone's seeking to get pregnant.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And the advice at the moment, and this is only the mRNA vaccine.
I don't know about you, dear listener, but I can hear Melanie loud and clear. She's in a car, but her line is very, very clear, and I can hear her perfectly, right?
Because they haven't. This is the first time they've been injected into human beings. So.
I see. We're battling with your signal a little bit, and it's. Thank you very much. Safe driving. Obviously, I can tell you're in a vehicle of some sort.
Yeah, we're battling with your signal, eh?
What kind of fuckery is this?
I don't know how fat fucking wankers like Nick Ferrari sleep at night, to be honest. You see, I've done 1,000 radio shows. I've worked at every level of the business. I'm an exceptionally good radio producer. What was happening there was somebody in the production studio, because there will be an adjoining production studio, was telling Ferrari to get her off the line. Can't have that. We can't have somebody coming onto a national radio program telling people who are listening that they're giving literature to those giving the jab which says impact on fertility is unknown, and that information is being withheld from the poor bastard who's getting the injection of hope into his arm. Nothing wrong with Melanie's line. She was coming through loud and clear. You see, it's not that I want to say these things. I'm not self-censoring. I really do believe that violence is not the answer. And I'm not going to say but. I wonder sometimes, though. I wonder if we ever got out of this and we turned it around and we took back our basic freedoms and threw off the shackles of the fascistic bastards who dream up lies like the pandemic hoax. If we ever got rid of them and if we ever began to enjoy freedom again, what would we do with people like Nick Ferrari and his kind? Exile them? Charge them? Put them on trial? Have tribunals? It's disgusting. But that's your mainstream media. Get her off. Get her off. Get her off quick. Invent some bullshit about her line going bad and just get her off. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in the northwest of the UK. The time is exactly 15 minutes. It's 6:15 on the 18th of January 2021. Hi to... Can some of you who tweet me, can you use an ordinary fucking name so I can give you a name when I read out your tweets? Oh, Jesus. Ah. I'm not reading out your tweets unless I can read a name. It doesn't have to be your real name. But somebody's stupid names. Somebody is tweeting me, and their Twitter handle is "Give me some of that damn fine Cosmo Canyon baby." Fuck off, please. Right, here we go. Here's the tune. Then coming back with more news on the Richie Allen Show this Monday. I know. It's Monday. The old mood is in and out, you know. I'll try the website again for the crack, will I?
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back to the program. It's exactly, well, it's 11 minutes to 6 o'clock this Monday. Monday's program. Right, let's get to the tweets then. Quite a few tweets coming in on all matters coronavirus and others as well. Luke says, Richie, did you see an article the other day in the Irish media? The article was called Coronavirus Season 3, The Vaccinator. They are laughing at us, says Luke. I didn't see that, Luke. If you have a link to it, do share it with me. I'll be very interested in that. Hi to Trucker. How you doing, Trucker? What's that you're saying to me? I see guilty, he says, when I see news like this. And he sent me a tweet from Irish Practice Nurses. Okay. I'll have a look at that a bit later on, my friend. Thank you. Hi to Andy. Hi to Chris Morell. How you doing, Andy? Andy says, Richie, you're spot on with regards to Ferrari. Yes, the language is probably inappropriate. I accept that. Well, it's dreadful. It's dreadful. It's obvious to anybody listening. There wasn't anything wrong with the woman's line. It's obvious to anybody listening that they had decided, as you know, as sure as today is Monday, just get her off the air. Wow. Lovely stuff. String him up by the knackers, says David. Chris says, did you see Desmond Swain was on High Wire Talk? I'm not sure what that is, Chris, but thanks anyway. Big Tree, the anti-vaxxer, put Desmond Swain, the MP, straight about Ferguson and the Great Barrington Declaration, etc. If he doesn't really do something, then he is controlled opposition, Desmond Swain. Chris, there isn't anything Desmond Swain can do. What can Desmond Swain do as a backbench Conservative MP? Nothing. There's nothing he can do. When he gets the opportunity to go on talk radio, he gets to explain why he doesn't believe that lockdowns work, why they are dystopian, Orwellian, why they are fascistic. He does his best, but it's really only talk radio that is giving him the time of day. So yeah. Alan Base Ninja says, Richie, I'm sure on talk radio today they said that no one knows the effect on fertility and the government has advised young women not to. Thanks for that, Alan. Loads and loads of tweets coming in. Thanks, Dean. This is from Dean Smith, of course, who runs his own care home. Very good bloke is Dean, and we'll be speaking with Dean again on the programme soon. And he's just tweeted me a link to the leaflet given with the vaccine. Thanks, Dean. It takes a few weeks for your body to build up protection from the vaccine. That's their own words, from the vaccine. It's probably a typo. But thanks very much, Dean. It could be a Freudian slip. Susan says, Richie, getting the vaccine is their new random lie to get us out of lockdowns and restrictions, which it won't, as we know, says Susan. The evolving new strains will be used for as long as they want. People need to stop colluding with the lies, stop watching crowdless sports and disengage from all of it, says Susan. Thanks very much for that, Susan. A night to Faisal there. And thanks for your Mrs. Doyle gif. Gif, imagine if they'd have told us years ago. We'd all be sharing gifs. And Fabrizio sent me a photograph of an article on Forbes.com that alleges, it seems to be genuine, that in, is it in Washington? Is it in Washington State? Is it? Let me scroll on down and find that, Fabrizio. I've got it here in front of me now. Cannabis activists in Washington, D.C. are planning to offer a free bag of marijuana for those receiving the vaccine for COVID-19, according to the group DC Marijuana Justice. The free cannabis giveaway, dubbed Joints for Jabs, how catchy, is being arranged to coincide with vaccine clinics expected to open in the nation's capital soon. DC Marijuana Justice offering a free bag of ganja. Free bag of ganja if you get your COVID-19 vaccine. 6.5 minutes to the top of the hour, the Richie Allen Radio Show. Well, we often talk about propaganda on this programme. We often do. You want to hear the greatest bit of propaganda disguised as news that you're ever likely to hear, at least this week anyway. Jeremy Vine on BBC Radio 2 has taken a shot at the title. He's had a go. BBC Radio 2. He's attempting to deify nurses and doctors by comparing them to the brave RAF pilots who did their bit in the Battle of Britain. Saved us all. The few, never before have so many owed so much to so few, or something like that anyway. This is genuine now. It isn't a parody. It's the Jeremy Vine Radio Show, which is a news show on BBC Two. It airs between 12 and 2, Monday to Friday. And I had to rewind this a couple of times today because I didn't believe I was actually hearing it. You ready?
The pressure on the NHS, we're told, is reaching bursting point. Every 30 seconds, a new COVID patient enters hospital. In the most severe cases, they can end up in intensive care. The job of treating them falls on a small number of doctors and nurses who've become increasingly exhausted. 80 years ago, in a different conflict against Nazi Germany, Winston Churchill talked about the fighter pilots who saved Britain from invasion and won the Battle of Britain. The phrase, the word that was used first by him was few, the few. Our reporter Tim Johns has been looking at those heroes of yesterday and today and how once again it is the few who are battling on behalf of the many.
This is astonishing now. Tim Johns, they've put together a news feature comparing doctors and nurses on the mythical, because it is mythical, front line, are comparable with the RAF pilots of the Second World War. Listen.
20th of August, 1940, Winston Churchill said this.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
He spoke of the fighter pilots taking to the skies in the Battle of Britain, one of the most crucial battles Britain has ever fought. The country stood alone against Nazi Germany as Hitler was preparing to invade. And those pilots, small in number, took to the skies relentlessly and repeatedly to successfully fight the Luftwaffe against the odds.
6 British fighters, 48 deadly machine guns, and a wild aerial dogfight make the Jerrys wish they'd had more training. A Nazi bomber comes into the gun sights of one of our fighters, a devastating burst of fire, and down he goes into the moat.
The whole country was at war. Of course, it was a monumental national effort. But at that crucial moment, the weight of that war effort was loaded on the shoulders of those pilots. They were exhausted, burnt out, but they stayed on the front line until the job was done.
The gratitude of every home in our island, in our empire, and indeed throughout the world, except in the abodes of the guilty, goes out to the British airmen who, undaunted by odds, unwearied in their constant challenge and mortal danger, are turning the tide of the world war by their prowess and by their devotion. Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
This is unconscionable propaganda now by the BBC. The gloves are off now with this garbage.
So many.
Fast forward 80 years and Britain faces a different foe. It's a virus, and the battleground is not the skies over southern England, but at this critical time, it's in our intensive care wards.
Since Christmas Day, we've seen another 15,000 increase in the inpatients in hospitals across England. That's the equivalent of filling 30 hospitals full of coronavirus patients. And staggeringly, every 30 seconds across England, another patient is being admitted to hospital with coronavirus.
This is a massive lie that every 30 seconds a patient is admitted to a hospital in the UK with COVID. It's a lie. I know this to be a lie. not conjecture. This is a monstrous lie. And I'll explain why it is in a few moments.
Virus.
Once again, it's a national effort. The pain and difficulties of restrictions and lockdowns borne by all of us have ultimately been about keeping our health system working and open and in a position to save lives. Right now, at this crucial moment, many hospitals are at capacity. And it's a relatively small number of doctors and nurses and hospital staff who are right on the front line, on the intensive care wards.
My emotions are all over the place. Scared, sad, petrified. Worried.
The physical and mental load is huge, and I'm really worried that we're going to break a lot of nurses.
They're exhausted physically and mentally, yet they'll continue on that front line until the job is done.
Just like those RAF pilots who go back into planes and went back up in the sky.
Done. For those NHS staff, things will yet continue to worsen before they get better. And once more, these words are so poignant.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
Winston Churchill ending that report by Tim Johns on Twitter. He's at Tim on Cheese. And he was speaking...
He's what now? What is his Twitter handle again?
So many to so few.
Winston Churchill ending that report by Tim Johns on Twitter. He's at Tim on Cheese.
He's at Tim on Cheese.
And he was speaking about why the words "the few" could maybe apply to those doctors and nurses, the small number who are working in intensive care. Let's talk to John Nicol, former RAF navigator and author, about that.
No, let's not hear from John Nicol, former RAF navigator. There isn't anything more for me to say about that. It's relentless. But I'm going to tell you a few facts, if you want to hear them. Now, these are facts, not conjecture. It's always important to distinguish between the two, particularly when loud-mouthed, sometimes foul-mouthed presenters like me are opining. This is a fact. The total number of NHS hospital beds in England, not the United Kingdom, including general and acute, right, that's general and acute illness that you're talking, ICU, mental illness beds, beds for maternity, patients, women having babies, of course, learning disability, and beds for a day only, somebody popping in to have an endoscopy or something, right? So the total number of beds in England has more than halved over the past 30 years. Now, it was 300,000 in 1987 to 1988. That's the winter of 1987, December into January, February 1988. It's 140,000 now. While the number of people needing hospitalisation has increased significantly. And I've talked at length over the years about how in many years the population of the UK has increased by a city the size of Cardiff every year. I'm talking to UK now. This is specifically talking about England. Imagine that. Wow. Salford Royal, which is across the road from BBG Studios, has 17 intensive care beds. This is something else the public is often confused by. When they hear things like, oh, there's no ICU beds and they're overwhelmed and they just don't have enough beds, the public imagines that there are dozens and dozens and dozens of ICU beds. There are not. We're bursting, they cry, bursting at the seams. There's only 17 ICU beds in Salford. And I know it can be as low as 6 or 7 or 8 in other hospitals around the country. So you've halved in 30 years the amount of hospital beds in England, while the population is increasing exponentially, year on year. And of course, people are living longer. And at the same time, less doctors, less nurses to care for those people coming in, less beds. Now, I was absolutely shite at maths in school, but you don't have to be a mathematics graduate or to be competent in maths to understand what's really going on. And it is true, every single winter. And we've seen the front pages of the broadsheet newspapers going back 10, 12, 15 years. We've seen the front pages with the same headlines every winter, haven't we? NHS at brink of collapse. NHS risks being overwhelmed. It's astonishing. It's the same thing year in, year out. Less beds, less staff, older people living longer. Thank God for that, by the way. Let's have a look at the statistics. Let's have a look at the statistics. Now, The Spectator. Now, I don't give a rat's arse what you might think about The Spectator and its politics. I couldn't care less. But it's doing a very helpful thing, is The Spectator. It's listing NHS. It's taking NHS figures. It's the service's own figures, the service's own data, and it's publishing it day in, day out on data.spectator.co.uk. This is going to shock and amaze you, like Joe Frazier. Will you hear this? Okay. Here is the latest occupancy levels for hospitals around England as of the 10th of January 2021. So as of last week, right? You ready? East of England, the latest occupancy in hospitals in the east of England is 87%. In January 2020, 94.8%. London, latest occupancy right now, 89.2%. Occupancy in January of 2020, pre-pandemic, 95.8%. The Midlands, now 86.1%. Last year, 95.4%. North and East Yorkshire, now 85.2%. Last January, 93.0%. 93 on the money. The North West, the place where I'm broadcasting from. Latest occupancy, 86.8%. Last year, 94.3%. South East, now 88.5%. Last year, 95.9%. And the southwest of the country, latest occupancy levels 87.5%. Last year, before the pandemic, it was 94.6%. They're liars. They are lying through their teeth now. They were lying through their teeth last year and the year before and the year before and the year before. It happens every year. You've halved your beds in 30 years. You've got less staff. Mother of divine Jesus Christ. I was reading the Irish Times today. In Ireland, there are 6,500 staff down in hospitals across the country. Can you imagine the pressure that is putting on those that are still there? That's got nothing to do with the virus or the potency of the virus or the dangerousness of the virus. Nothing. They're lying. And that's not conjecture, by the way. That's a fact. Let's have the latest headlines from FSN.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. Fresh security vetting is taking place for more than 20,000 US National Guard as the Pentagon makes sure none of them poses a threat to the security of Joe Biden's inauguration on Wednesday. Russian opposition activist Alexei Navalny has been jailed until February the 15th following a court appearance in Moscow, and a dozen gold miners trapped underground in eastern China have urged rescuers not to give up on them.
Thank you very much, Simon. Welcome back to the programme. 7 minutes past 6 o'clock it is on Monday, January 18th, 2021. My name is Richie Allen. Big shout out to Spiro Skouras of ActivistPost.com and the Spiro Skouras channel. How you doing, Spiro? Nice to know you're listening this evening. He's got a Guinness in hand as well. Good man. Can't beat Arthur's finest. Let's move on. Here's some music from Madge. Yes, I did say Madge. Why not? Why not? They said this was blasphemy back in the day because of the video. When we come back, more news on the Richie Allen Radio Show, so don't go anywhere. Get a brew on, like Spiro. Like a Prayer from Madonna on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Good stuff, let's move on from that. Plenty more to talk about between now and the end of the programme. Probably go to 6:30 today. I'm not sure how we're going. Just to give you a heads up, and I'll be very brief with this. I have hinted at this before. I'm finding it very difficult to continuously interview learned men and women telling us, as lovely as they are and as important as they are, but telling us repeatedly what we already know. This is a scam. The vaccine is potentially deadly. There's only so many times a week that I can sit and talk about coronavirus with an expert. It's very difficult for me to do it. I've been doing it now for the best part of 10 months. And to preserve my own sanity and to keep me coming back every day at 5 o'clock, I'm going to fiddle with the programme, and sometimes I'm just going to fly solo. It means more work for me in the long run, but it's a more enjoyable experience for me on the programme. That's why you don't have any guests today. The programme is content heavy today. Much more difficult to produce today's programme than it would have been if I had two guests, but I just can't bear it. I really can't. There are days when I can't bear it. And we're talking about people that I hold in very high esteem, that I really like, that I'd love to have a beer with. I just can't keep hearing it, you know? And it's not doing you any good either. And I do hear you. I do get a lot of emails. And I do read you loud and clear. You know, we just can't keep doing the same show day in, day out. So that's why it will, from time to time, be just me. All right? I'll do a couple of phone-ins as well, really soon. Maybe early next week we'll do a phone-in, and then maybe one every 2 weeks. We'll see how it goes. But I think you understand me. And the show is no less of an experience, I suppose, for the person listening to it, if I do it this way, as opposed to if I have two guests. Right? Okay. Righty-o. I know there are new listeners finding the programme all the time, so we will, from time to time, still have experts on to challenge the narrative. Of course we will. But it's not going to be every day anymore, because I can't take it. I just can't take it, you know? Okay. Let's have a look. What was I going to tell you? Yeah. Speaking of all these statistics, right? The Julia Hartley Brewer radio programme on Talk Radio dealt with the whole assigning deaths to COVID-19 when they shouldn't be. They got into that today. She got into it with a GP, an NHS doctor called Dawn Harper. And let's give Dawn Harper a little bit of credit for being very honest. This is an important little bit of audio here, discussing why deaths are being assigned to COVID when they just simply should not be. Dawn Harper with Julia Hartley Brewer.
And I think your point about COVID going onto a death certificate is quite relevant as well, actually. Of course, we are obsessed with COVID for obvious reasons. And if COVID is mentioned on a death certificate, then maybe that would be put down as a COVID death, where, of course, we know that that means a positive test within 28 days. So it's not necessarily the primary cause.
No. We don't know whether or not, you know, what percentage or what numbers of those people are. That's the information that isn't publicly available. Do you have patients that you've not been dealing with for years, who've got long-standing issues, long-standing problems, maybe very sadly close to the end of their lives, who've gone into hospital and who then got COVID or incidentally have COVID, but obviously have COVID on their death certificate because they were tested positive, and everyone in hospital is tested again and again and again anyway. But actually, it is your view that their cause of death was the long-standing ailment for which they were originally being treated?
Yes. So I think if you've got COVID on a death certificate, then that counts as your stat. But absolutely, of course, there are people who may have got COVID as a byproduct, if you like, but actually their underlying health issue was the bigger cause of concern.
You see, the truth is there for anybody who wants to listen to it, who wants to engage with it. It's all there. She said it there herself, an NHS doctor. How many people have been, you know, had their death assigned to coronavirus 19, and their life then has become meaningless? In a way, in a fashion, they've been used by lawyers in government and lawyers in the SAGE committee that's advising the government, using their death by lying about it to convince people that we need to be locked down. The vast majority of people who've had COVID assigned to their death certificate shouldn't have had it assigned to their death certificate because they were grievously ill very seriously, very gravely, gravely ill is the word, is the phrase I should have used there. They're in desperate straits anyway, and an infection was likely to knock them over. But I want you to share the segment of the programme just before the top of the hour, where I go through the latest data on bed occupancy in the UK. They are lying, 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 and lying again. Well, when if people could be bothered to get off their lazy backsides and look for themselves, I'm not going to say the research word. They've made do your own research a dirty phrase, haven't they? But if you look for yourself, you will see there is no crisis in the NHS today that wasn't there last year. And as I said, it was worse in January 2020 than it is now. 17 minutes past the hour. By the way, hi to Jackie Devoy. How you doing, Jackie? Great pal of mine from my London days. And Jackie was on the programme recently to talk about her. It was a fantastic conversation about liberating her father from the care home that he was in. Great lady. Jackie, I got your other email the other day and it's just dawned on me that I haven't replied to you. I'll be in touch tomorrow, Jackie, so I will. Sorry about that. I'm terrible at returning emails, but it's only because most days I'm up to me bloody tonsils doing stuff. And just as I'm about to send an email, I think about doing something else and off I go. Alrighty. Okay, let's move on. The Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, the Mayor without a mandate, of course, he's a worried man. Apparently, he's seeing a lot of vaccine hesitancy in London, and that just won't do. Here he is with LBC's James O'Brien.
The issue is to make sure those who need it the most get it first. So the focus is still those above the age of 80, those above the age of 70, those who live in care homes or are clinically extremely vulnerable, and those who work in the NHS and care sector. It's really important. If you're eligible, you get one. It's really important we don't have a situation where those that are eligible aren't taking them. And one of the reasons I'm here today, James, is because I'm afraid too many Londoners are hesitant about receiving the vaccine. And by me being here, I'm showing my support that I think the vaccines are a good thing. But also we've seen people that we trust, GPs, pharmacies, doctors in hospitals and others, having the vaccine as well. But also, you know, Her Majesty the Queen's had the vaccine and the Duke of Edinburgh. So the point I'm trying to get across is, let's try and address...
Does anybody believe that the Queen and that evil bastard Philip has had that vaccine? Does anybody seriously believe that? Forget about your opinions on vaccines. Forget about your opinions on pandemics and all the rest of it. Who honestly believes that they had the vaccine, eh? Not me.
Address some of the concerns London has had to get more and more people who are eligible.
To get more and more people who are eligible to take up the vaccine. They're really, really, really concerned, aren't they, about people not taking it up? They're desperate to get people to take this vaccine. They're desperate. And I've just had a tweet from Linda. How you doing, Linda? I think I might have retweeted it. But Linda makes a very good point about the nature of this vaccine itself. She says, Richie, according to Pfizer and Moderna, their vaccines are not vaccines as we understand them. They are synthetic gene therapies. I don't think many people will know that. Please keep up the good work, she says. You're right, Linda, and Professor Dolores Cahill has gotten into that on this programme, as did Sucharit Bhakti when I had him on from Germany. You're absolutely right. It isn't a vaccine in the real sense of the term vaccine, no doubt. Absolutely right. William says he believes they may have now extended it from 28 days to 60 days. Is that right? I'll have to double check that, William. I can't confirm or deny that. This is when somebody gets signed off as having died with COVID, it's usually if the death has occurred within 28 days of having received a positive coronavirus test from the utterly useless PCR tests. Right? William thinks that might have been extended. William, you'll have to share a link with me. I know some things. I know some stuff. That's just because I do a lot of reading. But I don't know that. And if that's true, that's very interesting. Peter asks, Richie, do you think the Ginger Ninja is listening every night now she's got so much free time? I highly doubt it, Peter. But then again, you never know. Let's move on quickly. 21 minutes past 6 o'clock. No, let's stay with Khan, because the virtue-signalling little twerp James O'Brien wanted to talk about the poor BAME people. BAME people, Black and minority, black, Asian and minority ethnic, BAME people, black, Asian and minority ethnic people who might not get the job. And James O'Brien is very concerned about them.
There is, as you will know, a particular reluctance reluctance is the word, among black and Asian and minority ethnic groups. Presumably that's on your priority list. But why do you think that might be? Why would BAME groups be less likely to want the vaccine than others?
Because they're not stupid.
My view is actually there's a very, very small percentage of those groups are COVID deniers, anti-vaxxers, but a large number...
A very small percentage of those groups are COVID deniers and anti-vaxxers.
Number of them.
He goes on to say that they don't trust the government.
Them have got unreasonable concerns and questions because historically, institutions have let many of these groups down.
Isn't that true?
And there is a lack of trust and confidence. And so we've got all of us in a position of power and influence reassure them based upon the facts and the science. So the reality is vaccines for decades now have been saving lives. This vaccine does save lives. So we're going to just calmly explain why this vaccine is a good thing. And the good news is the numbers of black Londoners in particular, black Asian minority Londoners in particular, the number of those who are hesitant is going down week by week. And we need to make sure that continues in the right direction.
Working class people, working class white people and minorities, not always been at the top of the economic success, I don't know, heap or pile. And I find, like he said there, a little bit more hesitancy when it comes to believing institutions or believing so-called authority figures. There's no doubt about that. You get left down, you get lighted so many times. And I have no idea. Now, this is pure conjecture, right? I'm not basing this on any survey or any study I've seen. But despite Boris Johnson triumphantly declaring that 4 million people have been vaccinated today and that they hope that by mid-February millions more will be vaccinated, I believe, again conjecture, that large numbers of people are likely to decline the offer when the text message comes in or the letter comes in or they get the phone call. I think a lot of people in this country are going to say no thanks. Because they're not stupid. And I'm fascinated, dear listener, at that point, what will they do? What will they do? Let's listen back to the lawyer, whose name escapes me now. Her name was Sunderland, wasn't it? That was her surname, Sunderland, the employment lawyer. Remember what she said earlier on? Have I got it? I have. Here it is.
There is a get out in that the government can prescribe by law a law to say, look, this is in the best interest of everybody's health. It is perfectly acceptable to make people to have vaccines.
Yeah, they can. The Coronavirus Act, they've given themselves the scope if they want to mandate it. Now, you might know, you might not know. I tweeted out last night, Sunday evening, not too long before I went off to my bed, by the way, that in New South Wales, the premier there, this is where I get into trouble now with my pronunciations, a woman called Gladys Berejiklian. I think I got it right. Berejiklian. Gladys Berejiklian. She's the premier of New South Wales in Australia. She has basically suggested that they're looking into, she said, we're looking into banning people from pubs, from restaurants and from workplaces if they don't have the vaccine. She said it's probably going to be necessary to do that to incentivise people to have the jab. Unvaccinated residents of New South Wales would be banned from venues. And they're proposing this. Coercion. So maybe they won't go the full hog and attempt to mandate it. Maybe they couldn't get that through Parliament, let alone get it through the House of Lords, maybe. Royal assent might be another thing, I don't know. Maybe they could get it through. I don't know. But they might really turn up the coercion in the coming weeks, if I'm right. And as I think, you know, many people are likely to say, no thanks, I don't want the vaccine, thank you very much indeed. So it's really only LBC, really, of the British broadcast media, the mainstream media, that's offering any resistance to it. And it's dwindling by the day, even on LBC. Peter Hitchens was on Mike Graham today. Hitchens says that when the government complains constantly that people are disobeying the rules, when the evidence is that people are in fact very compliant. Hitchens believes this is happening to give the government its excuse when lockdown 3 fails, as it inevitably will.
I genuinely think that if we pursued a more modestly targeted but more scientific approach to this disease from the start, we would have had fewer deaths. Mm. And that I don't think, if people say, well, if people would only take the lockdown more seriously, then more people would survive. I don't think that that's necessarily true. And also, I am appalled by the way in which people keep accusing the public of not abiding by the rules. I go about a lot. I see almost nobody not abiding by the rules. Compliance is an extraordinary. I think the government is preparing its excuse and its get out for the failure of its third useless lockdown. Mm. And when it fails, we'll be told, oh, well, you went out for 10 minutes more than you should have done. You had more exercise. Yeah. You breathed harder than you should have done. One person in 20,000 didn't wear a mask in Tesco's. This is nonsense. Mm. If the lockdown worked, these things would be trivial side issues. If it doesn't work, they make no difference.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we blame
the public in advance.
Blame the public in advance, eh? Lockdown means less testing using the useless PCR test, which throws up the false positives anyway. So in lockdown, cases appear to drop. And they're admitting this. They're saying now this week that cases seem to be going down and the R rate is going down. Well, that's because they're not using the PCR test as much because people are indoors. Okay? Okay. So when they open up a little bit, they will do more tests. The PCR test is still useless. You'll get more false positives. They'll say, oh shit, cases are going up. We'd best lock down again. And they know this. The scenario I've just given you is the legitimate scenario. It is exactly what's happened before and it will happen again. And they know this. This is evil on steroids. Let's give the final word today to the TV and radio presenter Beverly Turner. Great summing up of the madness on Channel 5 this morning. This is on the TV show that Jeremy Vine presents before his radio show, Beverly Turner. Last word to her.
It's just extraordinary that they haven't given us any sort of objective criteria or metric to which we start to reduce these lockdown measures. They know they don't have to. They know we've bought it. They know that we're not fighting back. They know that we're all stuck in our houses. There's absolutely no reason for them to do so. 250,000 small businesses have gone bust. The average age life expectancy in this country is still 81. The average age of death from COVID is 82.4. So all I'm asking for is a sense of perspective here and proportionality in terms of response. Of course, they need to give us some indication that they don't necessarily need to give a date. I agree with that. But they do need to give some sort of objective criteria of what they need to see. It's not good enough to say, hospital admissions need to be down. Deaths need to be down. What on earth does that mean? This is a sort of, to keep the whole country in this state of limbo is psychological cruelty. It's like being in an abusive relationship. They have to give people direction. We can't plan anything.
Beverly Turner on Channel 5 this morning. That's it for the BBG for Monday, the 18th of January, 2021. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Thanks for listening today. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Until then, bye for now.